and welcome to Background Briefing, available 24/7 at ianmasters.com. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with the international response to Donald Trump's crass and contemptible speech before the UN and speak with the former New York Times bureau chief at the UN, Barbara Crissett, who is now the UN correspondent for The Nation. She joins us to describe how the representatives of the nations of the world reacted to the leader of the most powerful nation on earth threatening to destroy a country of 25 million people in what was a campaign-style speech meant to rile up Trump's base of, at best, 35% of the country, delivered on the world stage in the name of the 65% of Americans who are left to endure this embarrassment and insult to what Thomas Jefferson referred to as the good opinion of mankind. Then we'll go to Mexico City to get an update on rescue efforts underway following Tuesday's 7.1 magnitude earthquake 60 miles south of Mexico City that collapsed buildings and schools, resulting in a death toll of at least 250 so far, with many more trapped under the rubble. Dudley Althaus, a Wall Street Journal correspondent for Mexico and Central America, joins us to discuss how the earthquake coincided with earthquake drills on the anniversary of the deadly 1985 quake and the heart-wrenching search underway for school children buried under the rubble. Then finally, we'll examine the increasing focus on Facebook, the social media platform from which 67% of Americans get their news and information, that operates in total opacity as it boasts to advertisers of its powers to reach billions of users while refusing to be held accountable for its content, whether it is from, quote, Jew haters or Russian bots and trolls. David Carroll, a professor of media design at the Parsons School of Design, joins us to discuss his article at Medium, Confronting a Nightmare for Democracy, Personal Data, Personalized Media, and Weaponized Propaganda, and the risk of ceding our democracy to the dark databases and vast resources of plutocrats like the Mercers, who manipulate the public to increase their power over our political life and economic future. Joining us now is Barbara Crissett, who is a writer on international affairs and the United Nations correspondent at The Nation magazine, as well as the author of several books on Asia. She was the New York Times chief correspondent in Southeast Asia and South Asia from 1984 to 1991, and later the New York Times bureau chief at the United Nations. Welcome to Background Briefing, Barbara Crissett.
Thank you.
And yesterday was quite an unusual day at the United Nations. And you were there, so give us a sense of what happened when Donald Trump made these extraordinary remarks that seemed out of place for a world body meant for nations to some extent, suppress their sovereignty and chauvinism and cooperate amongst them. It's about a family of nations, and yet here he is talking about sovereignty, which of course is code in dictatorships like in Russia and China, for don't question our human rights records, and says that we're America first and all of you should put your own priorities first. Well, that's obviously what happens at any rate, but you don't necessarily say that. But on top of that, it's threatening to destroy a country of 25 million people. That had to really rattle all of these countries. The idea that the most powerful nation on the earth could threaten to literally destroy a country at the United Nations. This goes beyond tone deafness. This was political vulgarity on a level beyond belief.
Yes, you asked what happened. What happened was dead silence in the hall. By the end of this, there was basically no applause. Trump marched out with his disciples, including Nikki Haley, the U.N. ambassador, and only Rex Tillerson stopped to shake hands with the Secretary General. People were already leaving the hall, although they'd been told to stay in their places until the president had departed. Some of them were leaving before he ever finished speaking. It was an extraordinary event, and certainly in the history of the United States at the United Nations, at least since the end of, you know, the end of the Cold War, but it goes back earlier than that. No one had put on a performance like this, which leads me to a secondary problem, which is just a kind of paraphrase here, that already the American media is taking this up as some kind of political story. This was a shock to the world, and that's really where some more attention should be focused. He scared an awful lot of countries. You said 25 million in North Korea, but how many million would be killed in South Korea? How many million American forces, troops, people on ships and so on, or even in Japan? I mean, no one knows what the reaction of Kim Jong-un would be if any kind of attack occurred, on him. So now they're the usual pundits, not the real experts, but some of the pundits saying, well, you know, he made his point. He was echoing George Bush. I'm sorry. I mean, I'm not a fan of George W. Bush, but this was unbelievably crude and unbelievably bombastic and actually terrifying. And it was done with that face he puts on when he wants to scare people. It was just appalling. There are no words beyond what I can think of now to talk about it. Add to this, he started his speech with a little, you know, sort of gentle hello and everything. But then he went into a detailed account of what terribly wonderful things he has done since he became a president, economy booming, all kinds of wonderful accomplishments, some of which were not true. A lot of what he claims in any case often is something that the seeds were planted in previous administrations, not just with Obama. But, you know, so no matter where you start on this, it was just, for an American, an embarrassing and almost physically sickening spectacle.
And again, I'm speaking with Barbara Crissett, who is a writer on international affairs and the United Nations correspondent at The Nation magazine, as well as the author of several books on Asia. She was the New York Times chief correspondent in Southeast Asia and South Asia from 1984 to 1991, and later the New York Times bureau chief at the United Nations. Well, if he wanted to hurt Rocket Man, that's how he referred to the North Korean dictator, he certainly failed. I mean, I know the North Koreans walked out before the speech began, but any attention you give Kim Jong-un is a gift. That's what that regime relishes, the idea that this, you know, the tyranny of the weak, this pathetic, broken, lunatic country is getting so much attention on the world stage. That's what I see so much about this president, that he, or for all his macho bluster, he's the best ally the Russians ever had. He's the best ally the Chinese ever had. And if he doesn't start a nuclear war, he'll be the best allies that the North Korean have.
Yes, in fact, you mentioned China, and that's an important point, because a lot of people are speculating that when he was slapping around North Korea, this was also intended to be a message to China. You know, China is not North Korea. China is not a third world country anymore. China is an international figure, a power in economics, and in fact, in global climate change, it's all for the Paris Agreement. China has moved so far ahead, while Trump has moved the United States back. So if he thought that not only, you know, is he handing China, you know, sort of a gift by talking about it, not in this case, but maybe on other parts of the speech, he is also possibly irritating the Chinese. And I was just talking to a Japanese analyst who said that their intelligence says the Chinese are worried about Kim Jong-un because they don't know what he would do even to them. He can't obviously destroy China, but, you know, he can unleash refugees across the border. He can do a number of things. And what's happened is that over the last few years, or I don't know how many years now, Kim has methodically assassinated every possible person who was close to China. It started, you know, with his uncle of that generation. China now is scrambling to know where to get the best intelligence on North Korea. It sounds like, in many ways, the United States' problem. So, you know, no matter how you look at China, it was bad, by the time the thing was over, yesterday.
Well, the only way that this situation could be solved, I think, is for the Chinese to invade. And I don't know whether they could, and whether they have any intelligence assets left, because he killed the uncle, then he killed the older half-brother with using sarin gas, and he was under Chinese protection. So it's clear that Kim is more afraid of the Chinese than he is of the Americans. But clearly a collapse. The Chinese don't want the American army on the Yalu River again. So,
right.
I mean, I don't even know why we're talking about this, Barbara, because we have a president who has no concept of what we're discussing. Apparently, every day he yells at Mattis and all these generals because he wants to do something military. He wants to go to war against North Korea, and they keep saying we can't do anything. And he keeps hammering at them. So we have like a kindergarten kid having tantrums who is desperately and recklessly ignorant as our commander-in-chief and the president of the United States. I mean, anybody that normalizes this guy, I think, is, to say the least, unpatriotic.
Well, yes, it concerns me, as I said, that it's suddenly become a discussion about how he did, you know, what did this do for him politically here or not. And I think that, you know, that sort of misses the big picture quite obviously. But, you know, there's another major concern about his speech. His rant, apart from it sounding, it goes back to the kind of style of, you know, everybody, V.K. Menon, Fidel Castro, Gaddafi. I mean, that kind of hectoring. Someone did call it last night in a television news analysis more like a sermon than a speech. But he didn't offer any ideas. He blasted everybody and everything, including the U.N., He doesn't even understand how the UN works. I mean, he talks about they and us. They is us. I mean, you know, we are part of the UN and the most important country in it. But he doesn't offer any kind of, well, you explain why. He doesn't know anything about the world. You know, John Kerry was talking this morning on a talk show about how it took 35 years to get to the Iran deal. And if they want to walk away from that now, it's half a century when Iran can make nuclear weapons. I mean, I'm paraphrasing him. But, you know, he doesn't understand also the consequences of the things he says. Now, one of the most important initiatives that's not getting any attention in Washington is that the Russians and Chinese, whatever you divide it by how you believe them, have twice proposed, or three times in the Security Council, talks between among Russia, China, the U.S., South Korea, North Korea, you know, a sort of gang of four or five, to try to come up with, okay, if North Korea will freeze its development, you know, they don't have to throw all their weapons in the ocean. If they freeze their development, what would the U.S. give in return that Kim could accept, because he's a maniac also? And there are people well steeped in Korean-American relations over decades who believe that let's put this impossible thing on a table somewhere and see what. I mean, what would the U.S. say? Well, okay, we'll recognize North Korea. We'll send an ambassador. That's always been under the skin of Kim, that he hasn't got U.S. recognition. The U.S. will not give up supporting South Korea. That would be maybe the big stumbling block. But, you know, the fact that the Chinese and the Russians have had some ideas are just thrown out of hand by this administration, in part because they don't understand, as you say, the history, the knowledge of the region, and even the way you use the word tone, even the way you deal with Asian leaders, this is different. You're not talking to real estate developers or your base with their guns. You're talking to established Asian figures who can be very formal and have an entirely different approach to things. So he, and there are other areas, he didn't offer anything. It was a totally negative assault, with a few things thrown out that weren't true. The U.S. is a great, a great contributor to humanitarian. Yes, the refugee thing was a total lie because the U.S. has cut all the aid for, you know, maternal health and so on out of the budget, with the population fund gone in its in U.S. contributions, and so on and so on and so on. So they say the refugees will be happier where they are. We're going to help them reestablish. Well, they've cut the programs that would help them, or they want to cut. I think Congress will take that apart a bit. So, you know, in other words, where was the positive in this? And this is what people are searching for now, and it, I think it's, as you suggest, a waste of time.
Well, just in closing, Barbara Cassette, with this new axis of evil that Donald Trump has now enunciated, effectively North Korea, Venezuela, and Iran, again, what we're talking about in terms of North Korea relishing the attention they're getting from Trump, I imagine the same is happening with Maduro. The idea of an American military invasion of Venezuela is the most counterintuitive and counterproductive thing imaginable. And, of course, the Iranians today, the Rouhani, made a speech that was obviously contemptuous of Trump. And probably because of Trump's outrageous behavior yesterday, the world looks more kindly upon Iran.
Yeah, this is a very interesting point. Yeah, a very interesting point. Yeah, I think... I don't want to go into, you know, a digression here, but it's a moment. It's a moment that some people now are beginning in Asia to say, are we seeing a new American policy? In Latin America, they're saying, oh my God, you know, here come the Yankees again. And it took several administrations to roll back some of that and improve relations with Latin American countries, all of, you know, many more of whom are democratic now than before. And along comes Trump and says these things about Venezuela, which, you know, which rightly will scare a lot of Latin Americans, but also, you know, gives the gift that you talked about earlier to the government of Maduro.
Well, Barbara Cassette, I thank you for joining us here today. I appreciate your time and the fact that you were able to witness this disgraceful behavior on the part of the President of the United States.
Well, thank you for letting me talk about it. and good luck with the rest of your coverage of this.
Thank you. And again, I've been speaking with Barbara Cassette, who's a writer on international affairs and the United Nations correspondent at The Nation magazine, as well as the author of several books on Asia. She was a New York Times chief correspondent in Southeast Asia and South Asia from 1984 to 1991, and later the New York Times bureau chief at the United Nations.
We're going to take a brief station break. We'll be back with an update from Mexico City on the rescue efforts underway following Tuesday's 7.1 magnitude earthquake 60 miles south of Mexico City.